don't you sit right back, and I may tell you a tale of three little pigs and a big bad wolf.
That's the best theme song I've ever heard.
Especially for today.
Yes, you're listening to The Heritage Report. I'm Jack Inslee.
Heather Hyman here.
And today we are talking Duroc pork.
Duroc's Duroc.
Duroc.
They do, indeed, with Craig Good. He'll be on the line with us in about 10 minutes here or so. We're broadcasting live right now out of the back of Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn, out of two repurposed shipping containers. And we got the heaters on next to us.
Yeah, it's kind of cold. For those who care, that was Green Jelly with Three Little Pigs, a song that I love dearly.
We're going to have to hear a little bit more of that later.
Yeah, probably. So anyway, today we're talking pork. We're talking Duroc, which up until now I had no idea what it was. Apparently it's a breed.
It's a breed of pig for sure. But why don't we first tell our listeners who you are, Jack?
It's true. I never introduced myself last week.
Yeah. Jack's my new co-host for the Heritage Report.
Yes. And I am the executive producer here at Heritage Radio Network. What else about me? I'm a musician and, that's about all that matters.
You're beginning to learn a lot about food.
It's true. Before I started working here, I loved McDonald's. And now I only secretly love McDonald's.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all good. So today we'll have Craig Good, as we mentioned earlier, on the line with us in just a bit. We'll be talking to him about something special that he's recently started to do on his farm, which is introducing a new breed of hog. As Jack mentioned, he wasn't sure too much about what the differences are in heritage breeds. And I guess I can speak to that a little bit.
Well, a heritage breed first is what? A heritage breed could mean...
It's a purebred. It has to do with the genetics of the animal.
Right. Now, there are more than one heritage breeds of pork?
Yes, most certainly. Cool. The heritage breeds that Heritage Foods USA and that I work most with on a week in and week out basis for sure is most definitely the Berkshire. We source about 150 pigs a week, Heritage Foods USA, that gets divided up into all of its parts and pieces and shipped across the country to restaurants and home chefs. Most of those pigs are Berkshire each week, but then we'll also have a little mix of some Duroc pigs, some Tamworth pigs, and some red wattle pigs.
So what's the difference? Like, why would I pick one over the other?
Well, it depends on your taste, really. I mean, you could compare breeds of pigs to different kinds of wines. Like, if you were talking red wine, for example, and you weren't really, like, really into red wine, and you wouldn't choose a Cabernet, something that's, like, so deep and rich.
Right.
So if you really aren't into pork, you wouldn't really want to go with a red wattle breed. Red wattle is, like, the porkiest of the four breeds I mentioned earlier.
By porky, you mean, like...
Meaty, gamey, like, it's going to have, like, the most, like, pork flavor to it. Opposed to like a Berkshire, which may be a little more mild, you know? For me, the Duroc breed is like the most like round. I really like the taste of it. It's very tender. But the Berkshire is definitely like the most consistent. We see that the marbling in it is really good fat-wise, the contents, the muscle structure, all of that differs between the different breeds for sure.
And if Berkshire were like a good Merlot, then I guess Boar's Head would be... Yellowtail or Gato Negro or Trader Joe's two-buck chuck, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what you mean by Boar's Head, but Boar's Head's not a breed.
I assume they just got, they had a big pig factory and they just had the same breed.
Who knows? No, we're sitting below a Boar's Head. It was probably just a good idea for the name of their company because they sell a lot of pork.
Well, I hate to air this out over the airwaves here, but I was walking... But the McKibben Lofts right around the corner, and there was this disgusting, like, pig carcass.
I saw a picture of that on the internet. It did look like pork skin, I must say.
I think it was. And it must have just fallen off a Boar's Head truck because the factory's right here. And that's either that or it was an art project and I've been fooled. But
interesting.
It was pretty disgusting.
Well, yeah, I never was sure what goes on at the Boar's Head dock across the street. I always thought it was like a loading dock of some sort. I don't really know if there's live animals over there. I'm not sure. It could be from one of these restaurants who order whole animals. Who knows?
Could be. Well, anyway.
That's just local.
All that being said.
That's just what's on the block here at Roberta's. Exactly. Right near our radio studio. Some interesting things go on for sure.
So now Craig has introduced this new breed.
Yes, that's what we're going to talk to Craig about. He's introduced a new breed of hog to his farm, the Old Spot, which I have never had a chance to taste the Old Spot breed before.
Old Spot breed is its own thing.
Yeah, it's totally different from the Duroc. So we're going to find out what the challenge is and, you know, how the transition, bring this pig into his farm and how he got the genetics and all that once we get him on in just a bit. But it's important to diversify on your farm. There's definitely, you know, things that one animal can do for the landscape itself that another can't. So, for example, I was just down in Virginia, I guess it was 2 weekends ago now, visiting Alec Bradford's farm, Leaping Waters Farm. He's been a guest on the network here a couple times. We've spoken about his ancient White Park cattle.
It's delicious.
Oh, it's so good. Well, part of the thing that makes that beef so delicious is the grasses that his cattle feed on. So he doesn't really need to do too much work, like with any kind of tractor or tiller or anything, because his animals till the lands. They eat the grass.
So they're workers also.
They're workers.
That's insane.
Definitely.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's definitely part of the reason why I think a lot of farmers have certain animals, you know, on their lands to help out with different tasks. Like, I know certain goats, you know, will go and, like, weed out some of the weeds in the garden or, you know, just munch on some of, like, the extra leaves and things of that sort.
It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it's nature.
Now, most farmers who are raising pigs, do they tend to stay with one breed or...
I think it depends on what kind of farm.
Right.
There's definitely like the farmers that have like transitioned from conventional farming to heritage farming, like heritage breed farming. And there's still probably farmers that donate, as we realized last week when we spoke with Marty at Spence Farm, who did the corn. He had, 150 acres of, like, regular crop and then 10 acres designated just to heirloom varieties.
Right.
So I'm sure the same goes with livestock, that, you know, many farmers probably still raise, like, that, you know, one kind of commodity pig, but then they might donate or they might use half or part of their land to raise, you know, heritage breeds or something that's, you know, for a different market,
which is getting more popular.
Definitely.
Cool.
But you know, as it gets popular, you know, more infrastructure needs to be placed and you know, it needs to become more available to customers at, you know, fair price, so that people can, you know, really experience the benefits of these heritage breeds.
So I mean, do the farmers kind of get together and have a brain trust meeting, like, how can we make this easier? Or
Well, there's definitely conferences. There's definitely, you know, meetings, you know, within the industry. I know our, owner of the Paradise Locker Meats, where most of our animals get slaughtered, they were just at a conference, a meat butchers conference last weekend. And I know that there's definitely a need for butchers. I mean, that's something that's a dying trade. I'm even in this local area, New York, I'm seeing, the meat hook. They're having classes on butchering.
Really cool.
Shauna Pacifico, the head chef at Back 40 in the East Village, she's got pig butchering classes as well.
Novella Carpenter came here and cut up some little bunnies.
Yeah,
it was cool.
You look on like the Whole Foods job listings, they're looking for people who know how to cut meat. I mean, you know, the more that people understand what to do with a whole animal and how to break it down, the better off we'll all be with these special cuts of meat from these different kinds of animals. And until someone understands, you know, really like the physiology of an animal, they're not going to be able to really give it to you in the way that it best presents itself.
So if you're listening and you lost your job in this economy, you should really get a whole animal and learn what the hell you're doing there, because we need it.
Yeah, well, for sure. We're gonna need people to always help us get the best food possible to our plates.
Well, let's get Craig on the phone. I want to figure out some more about these pigs. Old Spot pigs. You're listening to the Heritage Report on the Heritage Radio Network. We will be right back.
Okay.
Can only see your eyes, can no longer see your lips. Latch your arm to me, and don't let go your grip. No, baby, don't pull that switch. See, I'm trying to represent, and just learn who you are, and not be hesitant. The more I speak, the more you touch, the more I lunge for you. The more you cry, the more we fly, the more I come for you. And should it build your soul, or should it keep you down? And just take this hit, I still be around. Let's go. The hit again. Take the hit again.
Take the hit again.
Listening to the Heritage Report. I'm Jack Inslee with Heather Hyman right here next to me. That was our very own RecTech, aka Nat Wiener, with an exclusive remix for our music break. That's great.
Thank you.
We are at Roberta's Restaurant, which is at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today we're sponsored by Heritage Foods USA. And if you guys have anything to say, any questions for us or the farmers we interview, you can always call in live, and the number is 718-497-2128. And right now, I believe we have Craig on the phone. Craig, you there?
Yes, I am. Hello. How are you doing today?
Hey, Craig. We're good. How's it going?
Good. Good.
Hey, Craig. Welcome back to the network. We're happy to have you back on.
Hi, Heather.
How's everything going over there today in Kansas? Yeah.
Pretty good. We were having a little bit more mild weather than what we've been used to all winter, so we're happy about that.
Yeah, so that's pretty nice. You guys are very connected to the weather, being a farmer, so it's very important. We always seem to get a little report whenever we have anyone on the line with what's going on where they are in their part of this country.
That's right. It's we're directly related to the weather, and so we're very conscious of it.
Most indeed. Well, I am excited to have you on here today to talk about, you know, not only like the Duroc breed that you have been raising, but about the new breed of pig you most recently introduced to your farm. What breed is that? The Old Spot you did, right?
Yes, Old Spots, or some people might call them Gloucestershire Spots.
Wow.
Yep.
That's kind of a mouthful, but yeah. We kind of refer to them as Old Spots. The ones we have are not 100% pure Gloucestershire,
okay.
But they have a lot of Gloucestershire influence in them,
mm-hmm.
and they've been bred pretty intensely in that respect.
Now, how do you know what percentage of that breed that you pronounce way better than I'd be able to have in them?
I would have to, you just would have to go back in the pedigrees, mm-hmm. and to look on the registration papers to see. I know that the pigs that we got from this breeder in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
he could trace them back to an importation of some spots, Gloucestershires, back in the early to middle 80s.
Wow!
And we'd have to go back, and he had selected some of those pigs and had kept on breeding that particular line over and over through the generations, and so. That's what my pigs are that we have right now.
Where did the Old Spots originally come from? What country?
Well, actually, Gloucestershire, England. Okay, and so, I'm not as studied up on the Gloucestershires as I am nearly the Duroc's, but from what I'm able to glean, they originated in Gloucestershire, England.
Now, you said you bought this breeding stock from someone in Ohio. How in the world did you get these pigs from Ohio to Kansas?
Well, it's kind of a long story, Heather, but to try to condense it a little bit, this man had called me about we got these pigs. We took ownership of them in September of 09, this last fall, and this man had called me more than a year earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And he had contacted me, and I was acquainted with him, but we didn't know each other personally. And he said that somebody had suggested that he give me a call because he said, I think they said that I was one of the few people in the country that might appreciate these pigs.
You probably are.
Well, at the time, I thought about it, and I told him that at that time I really wasn't ready to take on anything new.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do a real good job with what we had and not get spread too thin. Well, a year later, when Patrick at Heritage Foods there had approached me about the possibility of wanting to, you know, have a more rare breed pig, then I contacted this fellow in Ohio thinking, well, there's just no chance a year later they'll have them.
But he said,
I sure have them, and he said, I need to get rid of them. He said, I just can't bring myself to sell them just to market because, he said, I've got so much time and so much breeding and concerning with these pigs that he said, I just hate to take them to market.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, he's had them from the 80s, so he selective breeded this pig, you know, to get the best qualities from it. Is that correct?
That's correct, Heather. And they looked quite a bit different than some of the other pigs, you know, that would be popular in this era.
And what exactly do they look like? Can you describe them?
Well, they've got what we would call lop or lop ears, or ears that would be bent down over their more towards their eyes.
Oh.
So they're not erect ears. They're more of a lop-eared breed or a heavy-eared breed. And they're fairly long and fairly tall. But the color pattern, they're kind of an off-white, or, you know, they're not pure just white, but they're kind of an off-white, and then they have black spots on them that are, some spots are maybe a foot in diameter, some might be even bigger than that.
Wow.
Some might be smaller than that.
Hence the name.
Yep. So the Gloucestershire spots is what, and so that's. That's kind of a description of them, but compare them to my Durocs. I would say it's a little early for me to tell a lot yet, but the pigs don't have as much, the Gloucestershires don't have as much muscle definition in terms of looking down their tops. They don't have quite as much, quite as much expression or definition of muscle that you might be, be seeing, and that's something that's a difference that I notice in terms of conformation.
And what does that implicate in terms of taste?
Well, I think probably in terms of taste, it's, you know, I'd hate to say because I might be telling a story, but but I think they'll, you know, because of that, I anticipate that they might have a real fine textured, lean,
mm-hmm.
and I'm quite sure that they'll also have additional fat cover.
That
compared to my Durocs. Now, as far as marbling or intramuscular fat, I'm not sure what they'll look like. Don't know yet because we haven't done any of the processing of this pork yet. But I'm anticipating, that the meat quality should be very good on these pigs and should be fine textured. And I would anticipate, being pretty tasty and pretty tender.
So none have been processed yet, huh? It's been pretty soon.
Not by me anyway.
Okay.
Now the fellow that I purchased them from, he compared them. He says the texture of the pork he thought was going to be more similar to a Berkshire.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And probably the color of the lean might be a little bit darker.
Hmm.
I can't speak from personal experience, but he said that that he had been selling some to some neighbors and said that the neighbors were extremely happy with it and thought that they really had really good meat meat quality and flavor.
So when do you suspect that these pigs will be ready to be brought to market?
Well, actually, Heather, I'm going to have my first babies or my first farrow, my first litter, in approximately 2 weeks.
Wow.
And so we're kind of excited about that. And and I don't know how fast the growth rate will be. I would anticipate that they're going to be a little slower growing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing probably in 6 to 7 more months, probably closer to 7 months, we'll probably have pigs for sale.
Now, do you find that this is an ideal time to have a litter? Like now that they'll be just being born, as the weather starts to change to get a little bit nicer where you are, and maybe they'll be able to eat a little bit more and gain a little weight faster or not so much?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good time to be having them. And probably the downside is they'll be finishing during the hot weather,
mm-hmm.
in which sometimes the pigs don't grow is effectively because their appetite, much like we are, if it's hot weather, sometimes their appetite isn't as good and they don't eat as much and grow quite as well. But that's not a big issue for us because we're able to keep them fairly clean and or cool in their sheds and in the shade that we have for them. And so that's not a big issue, but that's the downside, is that we'll be finishing during hot weather.
Yeah, well, we'll give them a little cold hose and they'll be
there,
all right, for sure.
Let's
take a short break and come back, learn a little bit more about the journey from Ohio to Kansas, and talk a little bit more about what you were up to this past weekend.
Okay, I'd love to share that with you.
We'll be right back.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your
And we're back on the Heritage Report on the Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can podcast all of these episodes, shows on the Heritage Radio Network. All you need to do is go to the iTunes store, search Heritage Radio Network, and they're all there for your listening pleasure. And again, you can call us at 718-497-2128 or email us with any questions at info@heritageradionetwork.com. And we're still on the phone with Craig. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, Craig, I really want to know about this journey that these old spots took from Ohio to your farm.
Okay. Well, we had made arrangements, first of all, in order to bring these pigs in, because our herd here in Kansas, we have what we would call a very high health herd of pigs. We're very particular about bringing in animals. As a matter of fact, our herd here, we've never brought an animal on the farm since our beginning, a live animal. And
wow.
And so because we're very, very conscious of biosecurity.
Definitely.
And because we can't afford to bring in disease. So we had these pigs blood tested for a number of different diseases, and they passed their tests, and so we made arrangements with this breeder to go pick them up. And they were in Ottawa, Ohio, which is about a 13-hour drive for us.
Oof.
And so Amy, my wife, and I, we left And we got there, and actually I had a cousin that lived in the neighborhood, so we were able to stop and see them, and,
nice.
And which was really fun. But then we went to load these pigs, and it was really quite an experience. The pigs had not, don't get me wrong, these pigs had not been abused at all.
Yeah.
But they were in kind of some old barns, buildings, and these pigs had been in there, and pigs can be kind of independent sometimes, and so, you know, when we went to get them out of those buildings, it was incredibly hard, and it took us about, to load the eight of them, it took us about 2.5 hours.
Oof. Is it because
it was quite frustrating, and so the pigs would hit the daylight, and they would just freeze up and just stand there like, I don't want to go any further. I'm scared to go out in the big world, you know.
Ooh.
How heavy are these pigs?
Oh, these were big. They would, estimating weight, some of them probably weighed close to 800 pounds.
Wow.
And most of them were probably 500 to 700 pounds.
Wow.
How do you move them? How did you end up getting them out?
Well, you sure can't manhandle them, that's for sure.
And it's not a cat. There's no catnip.
No, right. No. But what we finally did is, it was kind of a comedy. I wish we would have had a video camera, because it would have been hilarious to go back and watch it trying to push them around and everything, and they just don't push. So finally, an old trick that I've learned a long time ago, but I haven't used it just rarely, is I asked him. I said, "Do you have a bushel basket or a 5-gallon bucket or something?" He says, "Yeah, I've got a bushel basket." And so I said, well, let's get them turned around so they're back in, so they're headed out backwards.
Uh-huh.
And we just put the bushel basket over their head so that they can't see. And so then a pig will try to back up when they can't see. And so we were able just to back them right out of the old barn, you know, into where we could load them on our trailer.
That's brilliant.
That's what experience in farming will let you do, huh?
Well, and it's not hard on the animals at all. You know, it saves frustration of man and beast.
Yeah.
And so we did get them finally loaded, and it was hard. This gentleman was, probably in his 50s, but his dad was in his 80s, and I could tell they were hating to see him go.
Aw, yeah.
So, but we, you know, they knew that that we would take good care of them, and so we left with them and made it back to Kansas. So we drove really hard, and so that the pigs weren't on the trailer any longer than we had to have them.
What about getting them off the trailer once you got home?
Right, getting them off the trailer at home, that was another story. I was able to get all but two of them off. I have a trailer that goes up and down. It's hydraulic, and it goes up and down, so I can either load up to a big, tall truck or drop clear to the ground, and I backed it up even with my trailer, and I got six of them off, but there was two of them that I absolutely just couldn't, they wouldn't move. And so I thought, I'll outsmart them, I'll just leave the trailers backed up together, and surely in the night they'll wander over, but in the morning they were sitting in the same spot that they were where I left them, so that wasn't effective.
Wow.
So we did our other trick again and backed them out the trailer and with the basket and got them under our trailer and then took them out to our pens outside, our outside pens.
And how long did it take before they got together and had a litter?
What I did, because I had these pigs, I wanted to keep them. I kept them in two pens that were away from the rest of my herd, and because just in case there was a problem health wise with the pigs, you know, and we found it out after we got them here, that way they wouldn't have exposed all the rest of my pigs to that problem.
Okay.
So we did that. We kept them there, and so. What I did is I actually had two boars, and I kept one away from him because he was too big to use. He was so humongous that I felt like he would not be practical for me to use at that time.
Okay.
But I left the other boar, the younger boar, with him. And so as they came into heat, what we call standing heat, or they will receive a boar for mating, you know, we went ahead and let that happen. The first cycle, that they cycle every 18 to 21 days, the first cycle they did not conceive. But after that, then they started conceiving. And so I think out of the whole, you know, all the females, which we had was, we've got six now and two boars, and out of all that, I think I'll end up with probably, hopefully, three for sure, and maybe a fourth one might conceive. But I think there's several of them that will not probably go ahead and have babies.
Did it make you nervous after that first cycle when the sow didn't conceive that maybe you had done all this for nothing?
It did, Heather. It really did. But I figured, you know, what will be, and we just we'll take what we can get. And I was just tickled to get, if I can get a start of a couple of litters, and then I can keep new baby, you know, keep replacements back out of the ones that I raise.
Well, you seem to have a very positive attitude about it, and I know, you know, you're very careful with you know, the Duroc's and you're you know, keeping the other breeds separate. Do you find that there's ever going to be a reason to crossbreed the Duroc's with the old spots? Is that desirable in any way?
Heather, I think it would be a tremendous cross. I know the fellow that I got these from. He had Duroc's as well, and he said that he had eaten some of those. We would like to call them, I guess, for no better lack of a better term, spot rocks, because spots
nice.
And the Duroc's, you know. And so, yes, I do have plans to cross those because I think the characteristics of the breeds complement each other, and I think we could end up with a really, really outstanding tasting pork, and that's our hope anyway.
All right. Well, we'll have to change your tagline from Duroc's Duroc to something with like. I don't know. We'll come up with it when the time is right.
Yeah, we'll have to think on that one.
But will you come back on the air and tell us how it's going with the old spots, maybe in like a few months from now?
Yeah, I'd love to, Heather.
All right, wonderful. We'd be more than happy to have you back on.
I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty kind of proud of them. I mean, I've never brought in another breed like this, and it's you know, it's kind of a chance to preserve
a dying,
you know,
breed.
So a breed and some genetics that was going to go by the wayside
exactly.
if we didn't. So I feel positive about that.
And that's what excites us here on the Heritage Radio Network. Keeping biodiversity alive in our food supply is definitely something we support.
Absolutely.
We want to thank you, Craig, for joining us today.
Thanks, Craig.
We want to thank our listeners, and you could find us anytime at www.heritageradionetwork.com. Check out our archives for all of the network shows.
And thank you to our engineer, Nat Wiener, and our one-time producer, Jay Stewart. Heritage Foods USA, the sponsor, heritagefoodsusa.com. Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next week.
Well, I'm hoping, I'll blow your house in. Hoping, puffing, blow your house in. Hoping, puffing, blow your house in. Loving it up, puffing it up.